Something had to change. So what I did was I remembered being in OA and, of course, knowing that nothing else worked because I had tried everything that I thought I could do. That was me. You know, my best ideas kept me 240 to 280 pounds. My best ideas also kept me very, very isolated and very afraid of people. I never knew that I could go to work in the day and talk to people without being scared. I didn't know anything but fear of people. I really was never comfortable. Now, I was in a good relationship by that time, about 9 years by that time. That didn't do it. The relationship was fine. That did not do it. I just was very, very uncomfortable having a good job, decent car, nice relationship, I owned a house. That didn't do it, all right? I felt like I was alone. I felt like I couldn't move. I felt like I was frozen. And what I was feeling was I was not feeling any emotions by that time. Any emotion, it has just left. So that's how I felt when I came back into program, August of 2002. So I came back in just not knowing what else to do but walk in the room. I walked in the room, and I don't know what changed, but something definitely changed. I walked in the room willing to do something. I didn't know what that would look like, but I walked in the room, and within about a month, I got a sponsor, and the sponsor helped me start working the steps, and I just stayed with her. In other words, I stayed this time. I sat, and I listened, and I stayed, and I did exactly what she told me. Of course, in the beginning, she was my higher power. That was cool. That was fine. I still didn't know what anything was going to look like. I just did what she told me to do. Well, you know what? Get a sponsor who's working the program. Now I'm working the program. And that was the difference. I was doing my step writing. My abstinence was really the same. 3 meals a day, no sugar. As soon as I walked back in the room, that kind of gathered itself back and I felt comfortable. But my first day of abstinence is the first day I called a sponsor. I sat for about a month. But the first day I called a sponsor, that's September 28th, 2002. So she took me through the steps. She started me through the steps. And little by little, what I heard was a little bit here, a little bit there about God. First, it's always about the food for me. First, I had to put down the food, and I had to know how to do that. I never knew how to do that. So you guys taught me how to do that first. But very quickly, in doing my writing at the same time, very quickly it got to be like, how am I doing this? I had no clue. Well, I'm doing this because the steps bring me to God. That's the truth. So as I worked through my steps, different sponsors went all the way through the steps the first time. Then finally, I'm realizing what's helping me get through the day. What is helping me? God, I felt a little happy. You know what I mean? Now, it was scary to lose that weight. It was scary and it was different. Didn't know what that was going to look like either. But day by day, I have a whole bunch of people I can ask whatever I don't know. That's the gift of the program. I go into meetings. I don't know how to shop for clothes. I had no clue. Now I laugh at it. The first time I went shopping for a bathing suit at a healthy body weight, I don't know how that happened, but it happened. But in the I put down the food and I'm doing the stuff and I'm working and I'm doing service and I'm really just walking forward and I'm doing all the same thing, same work, same relationships, same car, and things are changing little by little. And what I learned in these rooms is that the reason I'm able to do this is because I'm making this connection with God. Now, I think I remember the first time I got the phrase, either God is everything or God is nothing, out of the big book. I remember when I finally got that. And there was a situation, and this was probably 4 or 5 years into program. Situation where I got really tense about, I had a sponsee that was having an operation, and I wasn't hearing that. I wasn't getting the phone call that everything went okay. So I remember going through, you know, eating lunch and thinking, it hit 1 o'clock, and I thought, oh my God, it's 1 o'clock and I haven't heard, something's wrong. Whatever made 1 o'clock be the magic number, that's what happened. And I called my sponsor and I just started like, here's my fear, and that's when I got it. She said, remember, either God is everything or God is nothing, you have to trust. That's the moment. I had this moment where I got it finally. Something happened and I got it. And that's the way everything in program has really worked for me. I either get very uncomfortable with something, and which will make me change, whatever it is, whatever it's about, I get uncomfortable, I realize I have to change. You know, in the spiritual experience, on that page, change, I think there's the word change is on that one page 5 times. Spiritual experience equals change. And that's what I had to learn. But I learned it in very, very small increments, finally realizing that, you know what, what I can do now is I go about my life. My life now has changed a lot, but you know, even in that time, all the circumstances were the same. All the circumstances were the same, but I was kind of navigating with a new captain, and I knew, like, the things I did in the morning were learned one by one. First, I think, I have to do my meditation. I could get up and do my meditation reading, so I could do that. Then you know, sponsor number whatever tells me I have to pray. Okay, I can do that. I hear the prayers at meetings. And then the next sponsor whatever says, okay, where's your meditation? Oh, okay, meditation. What? That's not me. Okay, but I can try it. And I start meditating. I'm doing my writing this whole time. I'm always working the steps. Whether it's on just going through with a new sponsor, or going through on one issue, something I need to write on, I go through the steps. All this stuff is making that connection with God solid. Pretty soon, I am not self-sufficient anymore. I'm everything sufficient, but the basis is God. When I'm with you guys, it's a spiritual program, and that's how I navigate now. It's a spiritual program. If I don't get something, look at all the people I can ask. It's just great. This is the way I've never had anything like that happen, where I have a posse of people that will help me if I don't know how to do something. And I can do that because, number one, food is put down. Number two, I have God as my captain. And that's really what happens. That's really what happened for me, is that little by little, I grew a spiritual connection that whatever's between my head and my heart now is clear. It's like cleaning out a drain. All that stuff, those defects that clog that got in the way of God, are gone. And then when they come back, that's the key, they come back. When they come back, I have tools now to say, oh, that's what that is. I'm in fear. I'm not connected. I'm thinking about X, Y, and Z. Well, that's okay. Now I have a tool. When I'm in fear, I write a letter to God, put it in the box. I have a box. I put it in the box, shut the lid. The lid does not get opened again until the next morning, when the next set of whatever goes in the box. And that's pretty much how I work my program. You know, I'm here today. I get in the middle of the herd. I have incredible group of people that helps me. And I'm really, really grateful that I could speak today. Thank you.
So please keep the basket circulating so that at the end we have a prolific amount of questions. And our next speaker is Mike E.
Hi, I'm Mike, compulsive overeater and a crazy person. Thank you so much for letting me speak, and thank you, Holly. God is an amazing topic for me. I'll just qualify. I've been in program for 4.5 years, and I have 3.5 years of abstinence. So it took me a good year to first feel like a human being in the program. It was really hard for me as a guy to come in. It to admit that, you know, my problem, you know, wasn't cool, like with alcohol or drugs. Like I had like a I had like a late night eating problem. And that was like my my witching hour was like from like 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. I would sit in the cupboard and I would just eat my feelings. So I didn't have to be intimate with anybody. And I got into program, and it took me a year to get, you know, more than, you know, I kept getting 60-day chips and 90-day chips, and I would just keep losing it. And I got a sponsor who was so gentle with me, and I was so angry about it, you know, because, you know, the way that, you know, my type of being an addict is that I would speak to myself in ways that were so horrible. You know, I just would talk to myself in ways that you would never speak to your worst enemy. And I really wanted a sponsor who spoke to me that way too and give me direction and be really tough and be like, you can't curse. You effed up again. You know, you lost 30 days. Like, I wanted him to yell at me, you know, when I would lose that. But, you know, every time I would lose my abstinence, he'd be like, it's okay, Mike, you just start again. And I was like, what? Don't. And this is actually going somewhere. And what I later came to recognize was that God had brought me the perfect sponsor for me. I needed a gentle sponsor because I was unbelievably ungentle with myself. And, you know, it was through my sponsor's gentle nature that I began to change the voice in my head, that I began to speak to myself in ways that were really foreign to me, and that is kindness. So this was something that was what I came to realize was a gift from God. And, you know, as I moved through the program, I began to realize that everything was a gift from God. And, you know, Holly, you stole my big saying, you know, God is everything or God is nothing, became the catchphrase for everything for me in this program. I came into this program on my knees, literally. Things were not going well for me in almost every aspect of my life, and it was my own best thinking that got me to where I was. Like, I could not do it using the craziness that was up here, because my solution was to sit in front of the cupboard for, you know, 4 hours and just eat out of bags and eat carbs and just eat things that that were just really like poison for me. So God, I began to realize, was protecting me at all times. And you know, I've gone through life and I never ended up homeless. I didn't end up destitute. I've always landed on my feet. But before a program, what I would do was just concentrate on the things that weren't going right instead of what was actually going right. And the acceptance that God is everything or God is nothing really puts a spin on every single moment in my life. You know, when I work in the crazy entertainment business, and, you know, when things don't go right, before I was in program, you know, I would sit and go, oh my God, this is a devastating, how did this happen, why me? And when you start to remember that rejection is God's protection, all of a sudden you realize, oh my God, this is exactly what's supposed to happen at this moment. And that there's something much more important that's going to happen to me. And so when I start to look through the prism of God is everything or God is nothing, then I start to realize that everything that happens is exactly what is supposed to happen at that moment. And that's something that's really a challenge for me, because I want it to be my way. I've always wanted it to be my way. And but looking at life through this prism, all of a sudden I can begin to accept what is in front of me and have serenity that I'm going to be taken care of, and that what is actually happening is exactly what's supposed to be. And this has changed my life in ways that I can barely communicate, but it has basically brought miracles into my life. I mean, it allowed me to, you know, reach heights that I could only dream of, that really didn't make any sense, like when I came into program and where I was and what was happening to me after I came in. And so much of that is this notion of giving it over and turning it over to a higher power, something greater than myself, because I can't do it. Again, you know, if it's left to me, I'm going to be making all the wrong decisions. And it is an amazing feeling to feel that I am never alone. You know, this program has brought me so many things, you know, especially I have my OA posse, and, you know, as someone likes to say, I have people on staff. You know, when things get rough, you know, there are people to call. There are people to text. And, you know, I just don't ever feel alone anymore. But on top of that, and on top of the meetings, and on top of doing the step work, and on top of having an unbelievable sponsor, I have a presence. I have a higher power. I have God. And I'm never alone. And that's an unbelievable comfort. And it's also something, and, you know, I'm going to be 1,000,000,000% honest. You know, I'm a human being, and so I'm not perfect. So I don't actually always remember that God is on, like, right here all the time. It's the easiest thing, but sometimes the hardest thing, especially when things aren't going my way. I tend to forget that I have this amazing presence around me to help me. So that's when I turn to my posse, and I remember to go to meetings. I remember to text my posse, and they remind me, did you turn it over? Ooh, there's a thought. But that is the absolute amazing part of being in this program, is that I no longer have to walk alone. I'm one of many. I'm in this with all of you, and that's an amazing feeling. I mean, this life is not the easiest thing in the world. But when I realize, you know, what I have here and in this program, and that I have my higher power, and I'm surrounded by just really infinite compassion and infinite love, it makes life a whole lot easier to walk through. So I just want to say that I'm incredibly grateful to have found these rooms. I'm such a grateful member of this program, and I cannot express my gratitude enough about being here and about having God to fall back on. I mean, the topic was, I don't know God, but but I feel like I actually do know God. God is an amazing fellow who walks with me even when I'm angry. And, you know, fellows are great to remind me that, it's okay to be angry at God. It really is. God will never abandon you. God never abandons you if you're you know, pissed off or frustrated or upset. I mean, even when you're cursing God, God is still there. God understands. God has infinite compassion. And I'll just say, you know, for those of you out there who are struggling, you know, with this whole God aspect, and I've had a few sponsees who had this issue, I would say that you act as if. And I would also say that it ain't going to make it worse. It can't make things any worse. You know, turning it over to a power greater than yourself and really giving it over to something else is not going to make your life any worse. And the miracles that can happen when you turn it over are amazing. And, you know, I'll just say again, you know, that I've experienced them firsthand. So, you know, anybody who is struggling with this topic and, you know, and feels a little off put by it, you know, I would say that it's not going to hurt you, and that if you just, like, take four to 6 weeks and just pretend, you act as if that you do have the faith and that there is something around you that is filled with infinite love and infinite compassion, there will be a change in the way that you hold yourself and the way that you act in the world and the way that you feel safe and the way that you interact with others. Because it certainly has made me a much more humble human being, that's for sure. Because again, like, you know, I always thought that I knew best, and at the end of the day, God knows best, and I certainly have realized that I'm not God, because whenever I do try to play God, it goes horribly wrong. It really does. So, anyways, I'm going to wrap up. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to stand up here tonight, and look forward to hearing the rest.
Thank you, Mike. So I forgot to say that Holly's from the San Fernando Valley. Mike is from Santa Monica. I will introduce our next speaker in a second. Where's the Ask It basket? Is it around? Okay. If someone could keep that circulating, but also bring me up the existing questions so I can begin my job, that would be great. And I'd like to introduce Julie A. from San Leandro.
Hi, my name's Julie, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I think that's better. So this is kind of a tough topic, and I think the best way to start is, you know, if you're sitting there, I used to have a really good attitude about these things. I thought, well, who the hell are you, and why should I listen? That was my first attitude coming to the birthday parties and other OA events. And I paid good money. This better be good, okay? And so all I've got to say is, Nancy, could you raise your hand, please? If this turns out to be a lousy CD, I want you to see Nancy after the meeting, not me. So I'm going to just share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what I think it's like. Yeah, really. Actually, anytime you share what used to be like and what it's like now, your sponsor should be standing here going, or so, okay, what did it used to be like? And also, I'm going to qualify, you know, this is my experience, my opinion, and I know that from the podium, swearing is not a good idea. I also know that sometimes a scatological remark or two will slip through. I apologize ahead of time, okay, because it's just, you know, I wouldn't have said S-H-I-T if I'd had a mouthful when I got here. But I don't know. There's just some words that, man, they fill the bill. So anyway, what I used to be like. Okay. I used to say this is the Reader's Digest version, but half the people in this room now are like, what's a Reader's Digest? So it's like, this is my Facebook profile version. Okay. What did it used to be like? Okay, bottom line is I was an obese baby, not a fat baby, an obese baby. Okay, I was an obese baby, I was a fat child, I was a fat adolescent, and I was a fat adult. And in between those fat times were little moments of thinness. My first diet was at the age of 5, okay? And when things like Metrical, Sego, Fresca were out, horrific times, dark ages, trust me, bad stuff. So anyway, but I've just always been fat. I mean, the school nurse used to call me up, you know, and used to say to me after they weighed you in, you know, honey, don't you think you should lose some weight? And I'm like going, what's wrong? I don't see anything wrong. My whole family eats like this. We all eat ice cream after dinner. Even the dog, you know, even the dog had diabetes, okay? So I know. But we didn't give it any cigarettes, okay? Okay, fat kid, fat adult, on diet since the age of 5, been humiliated. I really went, though, from being, I had this explained to me in NOE meeting. The difference between a cucumber and a pickle is pretty obvious to most people, and almost anybody can turn a cucumber into a pickle. Get your cook, you know, go on Google, right? You can, but nobody in MIT or NASA or anywhere knows how to turn a pickle back into a cucumber. And they said, Julie, you've been pickled. There is no way you're going to go back to being a normal eater, and that is the great obsession, to eat like normal people. The idea that I was or presently may be has had to be smashed, and what smashed it for me was food. Okay? So I'm a 5-time flunk out of a commercial weight loss program. I lost all my weight one time. I kept it off for a full 5 minutes. I began gaining it back in very short period of time. I came into OA because Jenny Craig was still in Australia, and there was nothing around. Rader hadn't started his programs, and I knew Dream Away wouldn't work. I knew AIDS wouldn't work. I mean, really? Chocolate candy to help me stop eating? Sure. So anyway, I came to Overeaters Anonymous the first time, and I got a sponsor. I kind of did it, and then I began compulsively overeating again. And I had come back from Africa after getting dysentery. It's a good way to lose weight, but the minute you hit civilization, all bets are off. So I'm gaining the weight again. I went to Overeaters Anonymous. I gained it all back, and I came back the second time, and I was beat. I was looking at tears, hit the tops of my shoes, sitting in the back. I was interesting to sit next to because I didn't shower much. And I was like Queen Victoria. I didn't take any makeup off. I just kept adding layers. And so, you know, there is no God in my life, and I'll tell you why. Because when I was 17, when I went from being a problem eater to a compulsive overeater, I watched my dad die over a summer from cancer. I was 17 years old, and I loved him dearly. And I had watched a lot of movies. My spirituality and my concept of God was based on The Robe, Ben-Hur, Song of Bernadette, Ten Commandments. Okay, I knew what God was all about, and good things happen to good people, bad things happen to bad people. If you prayed hard enough, God would come through. So I got on my knees. I said, God, this time I really mean it. The addict's prayer. This time I really mean it. Please save my dad. You can have me instead. Please save my dad. Dad died anyway. Dad died on Christmas morning, which I thought was particularly crappy on God's part. So at that point, I just slammed the door on God and went headfirst into anything I could get my hands on. So, and what I've been told in this program is you will either turn your life and will over to the care of a higher power or lower powers. There is no in-between for people like us. My lower powers were alcohol, drugs, guys, not always in that order, and most of all, food. Food was there the whole way through. So what happened was is I finally got to OA the second time and began working the steps, but couldn't figure out the fourth step. It was in English, but yeah. And, you know, I began compulsively overeating at an OA retreat. I found out they do lock up the food between meals. And I said, you know, I'm miserable eating, I'm miserable not eating. And the reason why I was miserable is because I hadn't worked the steps. I didn't turn my life well over the care of anything except a food scale. So I put on 16 pounds in 6 days and went to 98 to 200 in less than 3 months. And I did this during June, July, and August while in the program. So for the next 2.5 years, I'm praying to God, oh, God, please help me stop eating, and I eat again. Oh, God, please help me stop eating, and I eat again. And at this point, God, I'm having a little bit of a credibility issue with God because I keep praying, I keep going to meetings, I keep waltzing through the first 3 steps, and it ain't working, folks. So what happened to me was a miracle. That's the only way I can put it. I was too ashamed to go to an OA meeting. I went to an AA meeting, and I told them I've just eaten a pound of butter and a loaf of bread. They looked at me slightly strange. I know you don't even blink. And somebody after the meeting said something that penetrated, and I don't know why. And all they said was to be kind to myself. You could have knocked me over with a feather. I've always tried to shame myself into recovery, beat up myself into recovery, you know, bad person myself into recovery, you know. And to say, be kind to yourself. So I gave whatever it was one more try. I didn't say, oh, God. I just said, you know, if there's anything out there, help me to abstain. And I ate an abstinent breakfast, and it wasn't one of those wonderful things like you see in, you know, Bing Crosby and stuff where, oh, the food obsession vanished, and I was just fine eating this little mound of scrambled eggs and an orange. It's like, no, no, no. I could have eaten 8 more of those. But it was like, okay, just get up and go to work. And I would work all day. And so what a higher power was for me was I can't tell you what God is, but I can tell you what a higher power has done for me, what a God has done for me through this program, okay? The 12 steps are designed to give us a spiritual experience of some kind, meaning a change in my attitude, my actions, and my behavior for the better, okay? Well, the first thing that's better is I quit eating compulsively. That's better, okay? The next thing is I'm going to meetings and trying to be of service, right? And believe me, if you're as angry as I was, being of service is good because you get to put away the chairs and throw them in the closet and hear the clang, and it's like, yes. I didn't get angry. I was always depressed. And it wasn't until I got in OA and started abstaining I found out what anger was really. And boy, howdy. So fortunately, there's a 4-step, and I began, you know, working the program, and my sponsor kept telling me, oh, she has, I borrowed her God. Mine sucked. So I borrowed hers. And then what's happened to me as a result of listening to you people acting as if, I would look around the room and I would think, the God I have I don't like very much, but yours seems to be working pretty well. I'm going to talk to that. Thank you. So, I mean, the whole purpose of this is, why should I care about God if I don't have to seek him? If I'm doing just dandy, most people don't come into OA on a roll. Well, not that kind of roll. You know what I mean. You know, most of us come in here and it's like, you know, we are like going down for the third time. Okay? You know, it's bad. I hope it's bad. I hope it's really bad. Because if it's not really bad, who cares? Like it says in the 12 and 12, in the first step, in AA 12 and 12, who cares to admit complete defeat? Who wants to be rigorously honest? Oh, yeah, me. Who wants to turn their life and will over the care of some kind of higher power? Who wants to help others? You know, I'd fill out job applications and they'd say community service, hobbies. I thought, I'm all for you, but you're on your own. You know, I did no community service. What's that? Who cares? You know, I'm busy. So, you know, who wants to do those things? Practically no one, you know, especially people like me, you know. So anyway, what happened was is I started doing these things, you know, stick out your hand, say hi, greet the newcomer, sit at the literature table, you know, for Olympic-style recovery, be an intergroup rep, okay? You know, those kinds of things, right? And you start doing that stuff, and you find yourself going sane. I come to going sane. When I say a higher power creep, you know, will restore me a sanity. Sanity is, you know, Webster used to say, you know, the car breaks down, People call AAA. My car breaks down, I call suicide prevention. I really wanted to do that. That was when we had phone booths, you know. I'm staying in the phone booth thinking, I really do want to call suicide prevention, you know, but I called AAA. So the reason why I even bothered looking for, searching for, trying to understand or get some handle on any kind of a paragraph than myself was because of what it says in our big book. You know, it says, lack of power is my dilemma. I have to find a power greater than myself. If I do not, I am roadkill, okay? I cannot, at certain times, bring with sufficient force the memory of the pain and humiliation of a week ago. I can't even bring it an hour ago. You know, I'm one of those people that ate like cookie dough, stuffed it in a bag, rolled it up carefully, threw it in the trash, said never again, and in 2 hours I'm out there with a flashlight, pulling it out of the trash, picking the ants off it, and eating it anyway, till it's gone, okay? So I need something greater than me, because believe me, okay, you know, like, you know, I know it's not me, right? I fixed a lunch, I would say an abstinent lunch, but it was really skirting the edges, and as I'm walking out of the kitchen with this lunch, a pamphlet floats down off the top of the refrigerator, literally lands on my plate. It says, dignity of choice. OF. So I had to go back to the kitchen and get a different lunch. Okay. So, you know, one of these things, you know, you hear a lot in meetings over the years. I can say, I maintain about an 80-pound weight loss. I've been abstaining for 28 years. I've been in the program over 30, I think about, we did the math, 33, took three people, but we got it. 33, okay, years in this program. And one of the things I heard was, you know, I sought my soul I could not see. I sought my God eluded me. I sought my fellow man, and I found all three. I came in here and I found my fellows. I stopped being a square peg in a round hole. You gave me hope. You gave me help. And you gave me a program that, according to the book, says works in rough going. And believe you me, there's some pretty rough going out there. But I see people every day abstain through cancer, loss of job, loss of house, you know, all kinds of things. Broken shoelaces. I never wanted to eat over a shoelace. Never. But I wanted to eat over a whole lot of other things. Like, I can't find my car keys. But this program has enabled me to stay abstinent through getting married, through going back to school, through caring for my mother with Alzheimer's for 5.5 years, and she lived with us. That was a toughie. And the last thing I want to say is this. If you're new or fairly new, and this really feels like just, you know, who are these weirdos and what am I doing here? I just want to say one of the things I looked up a word when I was looking. I look up words, you know, because I think I know what they mean, but the program has kind of a different thing. And I looked up the word asylum. And it says, a place where one is safe and secure. It also says, an institution for the mentally ill. And I thought, well, welcome to Overeaters Anonymous. Welcome home.
Thank God we're not alone. Thank you, Julie, for your share. So now what we're going to do is I'm going to ask the questions to the panel. Thank you. What I've done is I've grouped them together. So if your exact question doesn't get answered, hopefully the theme of what you asked got answered because I put them together. So this first question is kind of a medley of some of your questions. How did you develop your concept of God? This is to the whole panel. How did you develop your concept of God, white light? And what do you do daily to keep your connection?
How about if we take turns? Go ahead, you guys.
How did I develop first?
Got it. Okay. My concept of God is really still developing, and it just happened over time, little by little. whatever I needed, I realized that if I talked to the right person, they would exactly tell me what I needed to hear about God. So that's how I developed, and if it felt right, that became my concept of God, because that whatever works for me, it's not for me to judge. In other words, whatever works is God. And if it's talking to somebody, it's a lot of times talking to my sponsor, I hear that's where God comes through. And how I work my spiritual program every day is I have meditation books. I pray and meditate. I do writing on the steps, and I do a God letter every morning, asking for specifically whatever I want, the defects I want removed. I bless people who need help for that day or somebody I'm struggling with, and then I thank God for my abstinence in my life. And that's, and of course, all the rest of the day are those other things that we all do in program with the sponsees and the sponsor, all that stuff, and abstaining, of course.
My concept of God is basically anything that's outside of myself. It's sponsees, it's sponsor, it's people that I talk to during the day, TV shows. I mean, sometimes Grey's Anatomy speaks God to me. What I read, I see God everywhere, honestly, and it really works for me. And what was the other part of the question? Totally forgot. Oh, my daily routine. My daily routine is that I pray and meditate every day. Not always at the same time, not for always at the same length, but I always carve out at least 10 minutes of prayer meditation every day, so that I can connect to something that's not me. That's not me. And in my prayer and meditation, I always make sure to send out love and compassion to all those less fortunate than I am. Because it's really, really important for me to get out of my own head and my own daily silly problems and, you know, why is this happening to me? So the more that I can think about other people and how to heal them, the better my day is.
I can just ditto what they said about, you know, daily prayer and meditation, things like that. As far as the concept of God, God's very big. And for me to come up with any kind of concept would not be what a higher power is. I look more at what a higher power has done. Okay? And a higher power has done a lot for me, but I look to God in this program. That's where I've found a God of my understanding, and that's where I continue, as it's been said, to have growth in my understanding. Thank you.
Okay, and there are some questions that are specific to specific panelists, so I'm going to kind of weave those in the group questions. This one's for Holly. Holly, what is your food plan? And then after that, can any of you share how your food plan has evolved?
Sure. My food plan. Well, I eat 3 meals a day. I don't eat sugar. I have identified what my alcoholic foods are, and I do not eat them. They're not included in the plan. I make the plan with God the night before the day. I email it to my sponsor, and it's really balanced, and I have certain things that I plug in every day, and I count calories, so it's a matter of 1,800 calories a day, and it's nearly the same every day, different food, but it's very structured and nearly the same to keep me at a healthy body weight.
And how has that evolved for any of the panel members?
Oh, way over time. Way over time. It's just it's trial and error until you find what works. So, and then stay with what works. That's how I did it.
I'll just say that in terms of God and my food plan, I was a cheeseaholic. Like, I was the dude who was, like, at a party, like, trying to find the cheese plate and just, like, go crazy. And, like, I'm not caring, like, what you were saying to me at parties. But I've decided to cut dairy out of my diet. And by the grace of God, like, I actually am revolted by cheese now. Like, I hate it. I hate cheese. I don't like to see it in front of me or anything. And I have to say, I mean, I've dropped a lot of weight
Yeah, I've had a lot of physical recovery, but also I just feel so much better. I honestly had a lot of aches and pains because I'm getting old, but I feel so much better. And it's honestly, it's by the grace of God. Like, if you would have told me, like, 2 years ago that I would not eat cheese, I would really not believe you.
Again, what both people have said about it evolving, what I could eat in my 20s is not what I can eat in my 50s. And I've developed food allergies. This is one area where my concept of God is that a higher power doesn't like me very much. I've had to let go of coffee and citrus and dairy. And I think God's got a lot to answer for. When I get to heaven, I want to know why chocolate is so much more calories than lettuce. I really.
Okay, so here's one for Mike. Mike, please talk a little bit more about act as if. What if I don't believe that God is everything? Is it okay to act as if?
Is it okay to act as if?
Yeah.
Is that what it says?
Yeah, talk more about it.
Well, here, if you don't have the faith inside of you, then what I tell people is that, okay, let's just pretend that you're not you, okay? Just pretend for 6 weeks that you're not you. You can pick anybody you want. I just say, because if I'm talking to you, say, just pretend you're me and you have my faith, okay? And so what I would do is that in situations where life becomes overwhelming and unmanageable, that's when you go to a power greater than yourself. And if you don't believe that there is such a thing, do what Mike does, or you know, do what Jesus does, whatever works for anybody, and just bring in something that is not you, that has the faith, and go to that and ask what you can do and what your higher power can do to relieve whatever problem or issue that you're dealing with at the time. So really what it is act as if you have faith, that you don't have any proof that something works, okay? But we don't have any proof that it does not work, okay? I mean, we can get into blah, blah, blah. But all I'm saying is that if you don't have the faith, then just pretend for 6 weeks that you do. Just pretend you're Mike. And then let's see where you are in 6 weeks.
Thank you. One of our question writers says, we hear God is love. Is God love?
You answer it. Yeah, absolutely. I believe that my basis is love, and if I can erase everything that's not love in my day, I am doing great, and I will abstain then too. So, thanks.
As far as I'm concerned, God is completely love. It's love out, love coming back. Whatever you put your attention on, it gets bigger. And so I try as much as I can to be of service, and that means sending out love to whoever and wherever I am.
I would agree that it's love. I also would say that it's love like a good parent will not let a kid play with, like, sharp knives. And I want to play with stuff, and when God takes it away or whatever takes it away, I'm like, but I was playing with that. And it's like, yeah. I think the best people I have in OA are those that will tell me the truth, not what I want to hear. And I think a higher power is one that tells the truth, not what I necessarily always want to hear.
Okay, here's a medley of a couple of questions. How do you trust in your higher power? Is it like jumping off a building? If you ever felt like you lost hope, how did your higher power help you regain that hope? To any of the panel members.
Well, I would just say absolutely, in terms of jumping off a building, you know, faith is something that you just have to just take. I don't want to use the word to define the word, but you just have to, even if there's no evidence that this is gonna help you, you just You just have to hope that you run into the Red Sea and it parts. Because those folks, it didn't part first. They ran in, and then it parted. So, you know, that's something to just think about. It's like, you know, it's a leap, and just go for it.
Jumping off a building is talking about gravity, not God. I think that people that jump off a building and say, God, catch me, are nuts. Okay? I think this is a big show-and-tell operation. I bet most of you who have been to any of the workshops or any of the meetings have heard people who, I can't lose weight, I'm a mess, I have 100 pounds off, I've been keeping it off for 3 years. Show-and-tell. That's God. Okay? I can't do something. Something else has done this for me. Show-and-tell. There is a God. I mean, all we have to do is go to meetings. And if you go to enough of them, I think we do like the saying, we come to, and then we come to believe. It's a process. And believe you me, I was pretty antagonistic about the whole thing. And I believe. So keep coming back.
Anything to add?
Yeah. I can tell you that I live my life not stepping out into anything because I was so scared. So what I feel like now is whatever I think I need to do or whatever God shows me to do, I step out and all you guys push me right into the path I need to be in. So I have a tremendous faith in the fellowship and a tremendous faith in God that everything that I will be shown. So, you know, if I just put down the food, I can hear it. And that's how my faith goes things.
Okay, could you share how you meditate?
You mean like what I actually do? You might.
Well, the question just says, could you share how you meditate?
I meditate anywhere, depending on how I'm feeling or if I need it. If I feel like I'm off balance, and what I do is just close my eyes, and sometimes I focus on a saying like "God show me the way," "God show me the way," and sometimes there's just nothing. I just connect. I connect to a white light of love and compassion.
I think if you want to know how I meditate rather than taking time and getting as many questions as possible, please come up and ask me after this, and I'd be happy to tell you how I meditate.
I have a lot of different ways, but the fact is that I do it every day is the most important thing. I do it every day. So, that you know, in whatever form, that's how I go.
Okay, what are some of the things you have done to remind you to bring God into situations when you are agitated?
The best thing I can do in the day is tell somebody I'm agitated, and it's usually my sponsor first, and then I get direction. If I keep it in, things do not go well. So I always talk to either my sponsor or somebody first about anything, and I can feel agitation now because I'm clear.
I mean, I just want to concur. I always there's a saying, there's magic in the telling. And so when you keep it inside, it's just not going to move. But it's so important to whoever it is, for me, it's a fellow or, you know, or my sponsor or a sponsee, somebody, just begin to speak about it. And of course, you can speak to God about it.
I have to notice I'm agitated because sometimes I'm so clueless about stuff. I just know I don't like you. I don't know why I don't like you. I don't like you. And, or, you know, that person, in other words, I was resentful of somebody for a year before I figured out, oh, I have a resentment. That's how quick, okay? But when I realize something's bothering me, what I try and do is, like, start the day right, okay? Start it with prayer and meditation. Start it with reading. Start it with talking to sponsees. So I've got a little edge on it. And lately what I've been trying to do is this. I give five people permission to be wrong. You cut me off in traffic. Oh, that's okay. I gave you permission. You know, you forgot to do the paperwork, and now my work's behind. Oh, that's okay. I gave you permission to be wrong. So I have five people between me and being agitated. And then when I run through five people, and sometimes I do and sometimes I don't, then I can take a look at a 10th step, which is when, you know, what's the spiritual axiom? Whenever I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me, you know, and I'm always sure it's you, but then I can take either a 10-step internally thought, phone call as it's been said, or writing, and I can get unagitated pretty quick if I want to.
Okie doke. Does your higher power provide you with definable spiritual experiences?
I mean, I would just say that I find God everywhere. I mean, a spiritual experience for me is sometimes looking at things in a different way. So to me, there's a spiritual experience to be had in literally like every corner of my life.
You know, I think what came to my mind is every day that I'm abstinent, because I could never do that by myself, every day that I'm abstinent is my spiritual experience. And I can go out in the world and whatever happens, you know, God's in control for it at that point. So every day that I'm abstinent, I feel it. Thanks.
There's an appendix in the back of the big book that says spiritual experience or spiritual awakening. And it talks about a change in personality, in actions, behavior, that kind of thing for the better. And so definable would be the fact that I'm sitting up here abstinent. Every day I have evidence of a spiritual experience. Every day I'm abstinent. I was looking for Jesus on the five freeway waving. That's what I wanted. You know, thumbs up, it's going to be okay. And that I was thinking, if I have one of those, you know, and what it turns out is, you know, that's not necessarily a spiritual experience. It could be hallucination, you know. But what I was told was a spiritual experience, I want dramatic. And instead what I get is daily life. Like, anytime I don't tell you something that's off color or rude, spiritual experience, yeah. Every time, have you ever like stood in the grocery line and you're counting people's groceries? It says 15. Let's check. You know, anytime I don't do that, spiritual experience. Latest spiritual experience, I was in the mission in San Francisco, which is like full of great taquerias. I go in there. I'm wanting a burrito. I haven't had a burrito in over a year. I should be able to have a burrito. I call my sponsor. She didn't care if I had a burrito, but I knew I shouldn't have a burrito, but I really wanted a burrito. So I pray, I go in, and I order the salad with the chicken and the shrimp on top. And usually it's the crappiest thing on the menu. Not so. Spiritual experience.
Okay, one more quick one. This one's for Holly. What do you do when I just can't seem to get abstinent no matter how hard you try? What do you do when you can't seem to get abstinent?
Well, here's what I tell people who call me or my sponsees. Can you eat an abstinent breakfast? Can you just eat an abstinent breakfast? What's next? What are you going to do next? Are you going to go to work? Work until noon. Call me. Can you eat an abstinent lunch? What's that going to look like? If you have to break it down to three or four different things a day for day one, but once day one happens, then it's like stepping on a train and staying on it. It's really hard to make that step on the train, but once you get on the train, it's a lot easier to stay on the train. So if you can get a day, you can get 2 days. If you can get a day, do the same thing. Make those calls again. That's the best advice I can give.
Thank you. That's all the time we have for questions. Please help me thank our speakers, Holly, Mike, and Julie. For sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us today. After a moment of silence, please stand where you are and join hands as we say the Serenity Prayer. Everyone holding?
Yeah.
God? Grant me the serenity.